Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
So this is the first episode that we are recording after returning from our European adventure. And it's about 7:30 a.m. and our family's been up for like 3 hours, and it's a little bit crazy here at our house today, but we are glad to be home, and I'm glad definitely to have had the opportunity to spend that time on our trip and had a great MicroConf Barcelona. How did you feel about MicroConf Barcelona, Rob?
This is our third European conference, and it went really well. I think we will probably return to Barcelona. The city's amazing. We had fantastic attendees, and to be honest, I think it was the best speaker lineup we've had in Europe to date. So I felt really good about the experience. And it was fun to be able to spend a month with the four of us hanging out.
It's neat to see that the conference kind of mature in Europe. Like now that it's been 3 years, there's enough of a community. People seem to know each other. It just feels like it's gelling in a way that it didn't quite the first couple of years.
Yeah. And that also happened in Vegas. Like the first couple of years was a bit touch and go. And the third and the fourth year were the years that we really got traction. Conference started getting a name. And as you said, people started knowing each other because they kept coming back. And if you looked at the show of hands, when I asked how many people have been to at least one MicroConf, it was somewhere between 50 and 60%. You start to get a critical mass at that point. There were about 150 people there. So you figure somewhere between 75 and 90 people had already been there. And so that's where you start building momentum. And there's real value, not only from the speakers, but from coming back and seeing the people whose businesses have progressed over the last year.
And I think one of the things that I always think about when I'm at MicroConf is just from my perspective as your wife, like how amazing it is to have built this community of people who know your work and are interested in following you and sort of learning from you and being part of this community with you. And I think that kind of drives our topic today. We're talking about the necessity of putting yourself out there. And I think that's one thing that you have been very successful at is putting yourself out there and practicing, whether it's writing or podcasting or writing your book, doing interviews, just really developing a public presence. And it's been phenomenally successful and has really helped kind of build your brand. So that's our topic for today, the necessity of putting yourself out there. And we're kind of fresh off of MicroConf, so we'll probably use a lot of examples from the conference as we go through our conversation.
Yeah, putting yourself out there is scary, no matter who you are. And I think there are certain personality types that deal better with it. In your MicroConf talk specifically, you talked about four different kind of, it wasn't personality types, but it was kind of upbringings and how those impact who you are. And it was like archetypes is kind of what it was, right? And you had the golden child who was raised with a bunch of encouragement, and there's a lot they can do. They're willing to take risks. But the negative side is that they can't often handle criticism because they didn't deal with it growing up. And then there's the survivor who had a lot of criticism and probably had a lot of rough stuff during their upbringing, and they can survive anything and they are very determined. But on the other hand, they may come across interpersonally as too aggressive, or they may speak their mind too much and they may put people off. And you had four kind of archetypes like that. And I think that depending on which side of the spectrum you're on of having been encouraged or being afraid of failure, I think that certain people are more cut out to put stuff out there and it's going to be easier for them to start. And then I think other people are going to be terrified of it and it's going to be really hard for them to start. I started more on the I'm terrified to do it. It was really, really hard to put myself out there back in 2005 is when I really started doing it. So it was about a decade ago. And I think that's kind of the first thing you need to take inventory of is to say, how scary is this? And then push into the scariness of it, right?
Well, maybe we should back up a little bit. Like why do it? I mean, there's certainly a chunk of us that are just happy to go about our private lives and do our work and raise our families, and even founders who are phenomenally successful and good at what they do without having much of a public presence. So So why do you think it's so necessary to put yourself out there?
Well, I mean, we should define put yourself out there, because I don't think put yourself out there is necessarily become a personal brand and go do interviews about you and your upbringing and how you started your company and reveal everything. I think building an app and putting your name on it and launching that into the public sphere is putting yourself out there, because you are signed, like this is your work of art that you're shipping and you're putting your signature on it. If you put your real name on something and it goes into the world and you can receive public criticism, in my opinion, that is putting yourself out there. And you can't do anything unless you do that, right? I mean, if you're going to publish blog posts on a topic, if you're going to record podcast episodes, if you're going to be interviewed, if you're going to write a book, if you're going to do a talk in a public sphere, if you're going to launch an ebook, if you're going to write an app, whether it's a WordPress plugin or an iPhone app or a web app, or if you want to start a software company, be a consultant, like any of these things, requires you to put yourself out there in some form or fashion. I think it's very, very difficult. Maybe someone can think of an exception of, oh, this person used a pseudonym and built a network of AdSense sites and never had to actually put their real name on it. Yeah, that maybe can happen, but I think that's a 1 in 10,000 case. And I think if you really want consistent long-term viability of your business, and we know whether that business is your personal brand or whether it's your software company, you have to put yourself out there eventually, and you have to expose yourself to potential criticism. And that's really the hard part of putting yourself out there.
So you're creating something that comes from your mind, from your heart, from your motivation and drive, and you're releasing it to the world. And that is, as you began our conversation, like inherently a very scary thing.
That's right. I don't know anyone who's immune to the thought of someone potentially criticizing them. I think it brings us back to being a kid. I think it brings you back to being in high school. If people ragged on you there, that you think people are going to do it when you launch this website, that you're going to get feedback on the design or feedback on how this doesn't work or how it needs another feature, or how you did this wrong. And I think that getting over that and being able to push past that and launch stuff into the public, like do things in public, that's the phrase that I use, right? Is like get something out there that people can see and then deal with the ramifications of it there. And again, this is a requirement, I believe, to building any type of company or doing anything interesting, building a personal brand. You have to get something out there that means something to you. If you push something out there and it doesn't mean anything to you and people criticize and you're like, ah, whatever, I don't think you're going to have long-term viability as a business. I think there's part of us in the things that we launch. And I think the balance here of putting yourself out there is learning that difference between having it be part of you, but not necessarily having the attacks on it or discussion of it be so personal to you.
So obviously this is really, really important. And it's, I think, the core of what we talk about when we talk about how difficult being a founder is, how difficult it is to put something out there that's yours. And I think the challenges are complicated and they're pretty deep-seated. And one, of course, is the discomfort that most of us experience with vulnerability, with being seen, with being heard, with having our ideas or thoughts on display to the world in a way where people can disregard them, criticize them, fight against them, not care about them, think they're dumb. Once we put ourselves out there, then we are open to the possibility that what we love, what we care about, what we want to share, nobody cares about it the same way that we do.
Right. And I think in the early days that this fear is largely unfounded, unless you have some type of, I don't know, some type of viral sensation that you do something and everybody sees it. The odds are generally good that you're not going to get criticism or people saying you're a failure. You're just going to get silence, right?
Which is its own problem.
Yeah, but it's not putting yourself out there. I don't think most people are as scared of that as they are of like the negative backlash or potential like public humiliation. My guess is that would be the worst fear of putting yourself out there. But I guess radio silence could be the secondary fear.
And we've both certainly had experiences of putting something out there and it not being particularly well received or receiving critical feedback about it. And I think that while those experiences sting, they don't matter that much.
No. Like
we were just at MicroConf and I gave a talk that was largely based on the founder origin series that we did on the podcast. And so it was pretty psychological. It was a bit of a departure from the common MicroConf talk.
It did not include tactics on how to drive traffic to your website.
It did not. And I said that at the beginning. I'm not going to talk about that. You know, someone at breakfast the next day, when I'm like getting breakfast for my kids in the hotel restaurant, came up and said, you know, okay, so you gave a talk yesterday. And he's like, well, I got to be honest, it sort of dragged on for me. And I thought you repeated yourself a little bit. And I was like, okay, first of all, I'm at breakfast. Like, I haven't even like had my coffee. Like, it was a little bit hard to take at that moment. I was also with both of my children, which I didn't really appreciate the time and place of that feedback. And it may have been legitimate feedback. I mean, my talk wasn't perfect in all ways. So I'm not above the possibility that this person had a very legitimate point. But it definitely did sting in that moment. And I felt like my face kind of drop a little bit and kind of be like, had to take a quick breath and just sort of steady myself because it was something I wasn't expecting at that time. And it lasted for like a couple minutes. And then I sat down to breakfast with my kids and moved on about my day. But those are the things that I fear, right? Is someone saying your talk wasn't very smart, it was sort of boring, I don't know why you're here. Those are the things that get in my head and make it hard for me to get up in front and do a talk like that, for example. But when the worst happens, like when the criticism happens, it isn't actually that, at least in this experience, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that derailing. It was okay that he didn't really like my talk.
Yeah, I think like anything, there's this fear of anticipation, right? You're like, you build it up and you build up more anxiety and worry than how it actually winds up being. Even if things do go sideways, they tend to not be as bad as the worst case that you have in your mind. And the fact that you heard that face to face and it kind of punches you in the gut. I've had that happen several times as well. Punches you in the gut at first and you don't know what to say. Then you get over it and you get so much better at dealing with it the next time and either shrugging it off or realizing like, oh, that's good feedback, and actually taking it as feedback. That's such a big part of this, is when you first start, probably no one's going to listen and you just have to bang the drum until people start caring. And then once people start caring, you are going to get a lot of positive feedback. And, you know, 1 in 50 is probably going to be some criticism. And that criticism is going to sting way more than all the other people. Because my guess is you had dozens of people tell you they loved your talk, that it changed the way they think about X, Y, and Z, that they're going to implement it this way, that they'd never thought about it. You kind of coined these archetypes and people were using them. I found myself using them naturally. You and I had a conversation. I said, so-and-so is like a golden child type, right? I mean, that's the type that you invented. So already people are starting to adopt a thing. And yet one person says one thing and we take that to be, somehow it has more weight or it hits us harder than all the positive accolades that we received.
So maybe we should shift a little bit. I mean, obviously, I don't think we need to go into much more explaining of how hard it is to put yourself out there in some of these ways. But what are some of the ways that people can use to deal with haters, so to speak, to tolerate that negative feedback and to keep going?
Yeah, I mean, I really see there's kind of three. There's obviously a continuum of feedback, right? Of negative feedback. I kind of break it into three buckets. There's the feedback that is really well delivered, and it's typically by someone you probably know or like or trust and perhaps respect. And they approach it like, hey, can I give you some feedback? Or, hey, would it be okay if I made a suggestion? And then you're, of course, you're totally open to it. And then they give you feedback like, hey, you talked too fast, or hey, your talk dragged on, or this is how you could improve that. That's not a hater. That's just constructive feedback. And in my opinion, you know, even in the early days, like say a decade ago, that would have probably shaken me of like, whoa, someone criticized something because I didn't know how to deal with it. These days, I welcome that kind of feedback, especially from when I'm asking for it or from people that I know. And I know that they have the authority to kind of give me that feedback. When I get anonymous emails, or not even anonymous, but emails from people I don't know, and they're telling me like, hey, you can improve your marketing speak, your headline isn't very good, you should do this, or you should split that sis. It's like, wait, who are you? Like, are you like a 19-year-old college kid trying to tell me something? Or are you like an expert on something? Because if I don't know who you are, it's not helpful.
So it sounds like realizing that putting yourself out there means that you do have opportunities to grow. Like, your liabilities may be obvious to some people, and to be open to growth and like constructive criticism from people that you trust.
Yep. That's the big
one. So even like pursuing that, I mean, I will often after giving a talk or doing something, or even with the podcast, like we've sought feedback from people that we trust and we've really asked like, what can we do better? What do you want to hear about?
Right.
So anticipating that it's not going to be perfect and being fine with that. So finding ways to use constructive criticism and actually pursuing that from people that are helpful.
Right.
That's so that correct. Seems like one way to kind of cope with the fear of criticism is to sort of know like, oh yeah, there's totally going to be things to be criticized. Like it's not going to be perfect and that's okay. I just have to identify the ways that I can grow and trust certain people to help me identify those areas.
Right.
And then you have this set of feedback that's from people who you don't know or
that's just overtly negative, that you'll get something where it's not well said at all. Like it's someone coming up to you at breakfast before your coffee with your child and saying, hey, how are you? You don't know me. Yeah, your talk wasn't very good. Or someone writing you an email who you don't know and saying, yeah, your app isn't very good. It should be way cheaper and it should do twice as much, right? I mean, it's just kind of like, it's A, it's not helpful, or B, it's delivered with no tact or no grace, right? So it's tends to be most
not constructive.
It's
not an opportunity for growth. It's like an opportunity for that person to feel superior because they've identified a potential weakness in your work.
Right. And that's, I mean, I use the phrase over and over. It's easy to criticize from the stands. The people who send that kind of feedback, for the most part, are not doing anything. They are not doing things in public. And that's why if I get emails like that and I looked at their reportive in Gmail shows who they are and kind of what they've done, most often they don't have a blog, podcast, a book, an event. They don't do speaking. They don't do anything in public. And so their opinion has to be less valuable than someone who A, I know, or B, is doing things and I feel like has experience. And so I tend to certainly value that feedback less. And I think that you should too.
And then there's kind of this third category that makes putting yourself out there risky. And that's like not just negative feedback, but like real haters, like trolls, or people who are really out to bring about like harm to you or to your business. And I have to be honest, like, I don't feel like I'm well equipped to totally handle that. And it hasn't really happened on Zen Founder. It hasn't really happened to me. But just somebody who is really motivated to just bring about your demise.
Who has a lot of free time and is willing to use it to do bad stuff.
And I know that's happened with you a little bit. How do you cope with that?
Yeah, I've had it happen a couple times. It's a bummer. It really derails you typically, you know, last time it happened, it was probably a couple weeks on and off of just being derailed. And I've heard all types of stories. I mean, there are folks who get trolled and the typical advice is to ignore it. And that does work sometimes. Just completely block and ignore. And then other times it doesn't. And the person is more persistent and ignoring them makes them want to try harder to get to have an impact or get you to react to it, basically. I don't know if there's an easy answer to this one. I think that the odds of it happening are very, very low. And I think that it's certainly something that's a possibility, but I think that folks with large audiences, you know, you look at a Leo Laporte or someone with hundreds of thousands of fans is just much more likely by the law of large numbers to have this happen to them. And I think that staying in niches and not having such a large audience, I think is actually an advantage in that respect.
I mean, it's not necessarily something that should keep you from doing things.
No, because this, for the most part,
it's a little bit like terrorism. Like,
yeah.
It's successful when people are afraid, but when you decide I'm going to take the risk anyway and decide to live my life and do my thing and do my work.
Right. And depending on what you're launching, I mean, if you talk to 100 people who have launched apps or written an ebook, I would say 0 to 1 of them have ever really been controlled consistently in a way that they couldn't get away from. It really is a fairly rare thing, and it tends to happen to people with large audiences and really strong opinions about things. And there's certain things that make that happen. And it's just the odds of it happening to you, I think, are so low that it can't be a deterrent. I think terrorism is a good analogy to that. Yes, it does scare some people, and some people don't want to fly because of it or don't want to go to certain places because of it, but the odds of a terrorist attack are obviously, you're more likely to get killed in a car accident than to be killed by terrorism, and it's like, I don't know, 10,000 times more likely to be killed in a car accident, but we don't let that stop us from getting on the road.
it's more difficult to deal with the negative feedback in my own head than it is to deal with the negative feedback from others. So maybe we can shift a little bit and talk about kind of the hater in your own head. And I think some of the strategies that have been helpful to me personally, but I think are helpful to my patients and clients and people that I work with, is when you are experiencing some kind of negative affect around risks that you're taking or ways that you're putting yourself out there, to really like identify and write down what those thoughts are. To not ignore them and let them linger in the sort of dark corners of your head, but to put them out on paper and even make a list. Like, I'm afraid that, or I am worried that, or I believe. I mean, to get those thoughts out and list them, and then you have some traction to use your rational brain to sort of dispute them. What I'm talking about is kind of the basic of cognitive therapy, or where we're taking thoughts that are maybe not helpful and actively challenging them. And some of those thoughts might be, I don't know anything, or I'm not good at this. No one's going to take me seriously. And when you can get those thoughts out of your head and onto paper, then you have a little bit more traction to sort of think through, how valid is this? Is this true or not true? Is there another way of thinking about this? Where does this thought come from? Is this the voice of my mother or my father or my ex-wife in my head? Where is this voice coming from? And is it actually a trustworthy voice?
And this gets easier over time.
Yeah, because you have more evidence to use to dispute the thoughts.
Yep. The more you launch, the more you ship, the more you do things in public and put yourself out there, the better you get at it, and the better you get at dealing with the fear of it, and the better you get at handling the criticism and taking the positive thoughts and using it as fuel, because it's addictive to ship. It's addictive to do a talk. It's addictive to launch an app or an ebook, because once you do it, you feel great. You get this massive endorphin rush and it makes you want to do it again. Then if you get some criticism, you learn to take some of that, make your product better. You learn to disregard the others. And I mean, it is a virtuous cycle.
And you practice failure. Like, if you've had a bad talk or you've had an app fail, you also learn that that's tolerable. So you have this evidence of successes and that makes it easier. But then you also see, like, oh, I was giving a talk one time to a group in China and it just bombed. Like, I stopped in the middle and said, I just want to check in and see if this is working, like if we're communicating effectively. Like, it was terrible. It was terrible. But you know what? I got through it and I learned some things about it, and I learned about how to give talks better in different cultural contexts. And I think about that when I feel afraid. I think, well, I've already had to stop in the middle and like check in. I've already felt so bad about how it was going that I didn't want to continue. And even that, like, was okay. I woke up the next day and I kept working and kept doing my thing. So I think that also helps to deal with the hater in your own head, is once you've had some successes, but also once you've had some failures or some things not go well, you just sort of learn that that's part of it and that's tolerable.
Yep. And it gives you the confidence to do it so much better and to take more risks over time. This confidence that you build allows you to do things better because you are willing to go out on a limb and try things because you know that you can recover from them. We've done this with MicroConf, where the first year we were very rigid and stiff and didn't know what we were doing. And by the time we've had scheduling issues, we've had audio issues, we've had sprinkler pipes break in the middle of a talk. We've had all kinds of stuff. We've had speakers cancel on us the night before. We've had speakers go half time. You know, they're supposed to go 45 minutes and they go 25 minutes. I mean, at this point, we've seen a lot of stuff, but it's allowed us to get better and to take some risks. And because, as you said, we've seen how it can go bad and how you recover from that. And it allows us the confidence to push forward and do it better the next time.
This is obviously really important when we think about the individual success of founders, but I also think it's important that there are more and more different kinds of voices that are heard in this community. And I think the people who are most afraid maybe are people whose voices we most need to hear. So I think one of the best strategies to become more comfortable putting yourself out there, as we've mentioned already, is just to do it, to press into the things that you're afraid of, to do things in public. And whether that's beginning to do, to get comfortable public speaking by joining Toastmasters or giving a talk at your local like library reading group, just getting some experience hearing your own voice and growing from there, encountering some failures, encountering some successes. And obviously, Rob, you have talked consistently over the years about shipping, about just getting things out there, doing more and more work, being productive, and eventually watching that growth curve happen, both in the quality of your work, but in the quality of your confidence and the quality of the voice that you put forth into the world.
Yeah, I think this is similar to, I talk about the stair-step approach to bootstrapping, and you build small product and then you level up and you level up and you gain the confidence and you gain experience. I think it's the same way with shipping anything, is get small wins early, get that blog post out there, feel the heat under your collar when you publish it or when the first person comments on it, and you'll go back and revise it 20 times and you'll spend 8 hours on a simple blog post. That very first one's really hard, but it's a nice stair step towards writing that book or launching that app or doing something more vulnerable, like doing a conference talk, which will terrify you the first time. And then the fifth time you do it, you'll be over that. And then you can just, you know, you can expand on that. And if you never do this, you will be scared of all of this stuff. It can keep you from achieving the things that you are cut out to do. But the more you press into this, the more you press into your fears, and push through them, over years, you will see this change. And suddenly you'll look back and say, wow, I can't believe I was ever scared of publishing a blog post. Now I just crank one out instantly. Can't believe I was scared of doing a conference talk. Now I can write one in a few hours and go up without being nervous.
I don't know about without being nervous.
That takes a long time.
And maybe not ever, because it is important and you want to do well. And nerves can help with that a little bit, but I think it's also just really personally gratifying to not be afraid and to kind of pursue that goal with drive and discipline, to push into the places that you may be afraid or nervous and conquer them. That's a sort of satisfying existential activity.
Yeah, I think it has two rewards. One is that you actually ship something. So there's probably some type of monetary reward or some type of advancement to your reputation that's a reward. And then the second one is internal. It grows you. As you said, it's an existential reward.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.